He's the only guy that you'll meet that shares my sense of humor. To give you a quick example, when his kids were growing up without my kids, and the boys came over the house and they found my three-wheeler, and they started up and went around my yard like a racing track. By the time I got home, I didn't have a grass that looked like a go-kart path. So I called up Ed and I complained to him, and of course he felt bad about it, and then a few days later, I sent him a bill for the repair. So he and Carol felt so bad, they invited us over to dinner. The whole family. So we went over and ate with them. 3 days later, I got a bill for that.
Great to be with you this morning. It's a beautiful day God's given us. That just a little bit of coolness in the air is refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Looking good. Looking good. Good to be with you. I love the story of Jesus. And that's what we're going to focus in on this morning. And focusing on it in a way that is unusual for me the first time I thought about it. And I hope it will be as meaningful to you as it is to me. We're going to look at the hands of Jesus. Because his hands tell his story. We just start out with thinking about Jesus, the baby in the manger. And we've got Jesus with the hands of an infant. Tiny little fingernails, wrinkled knuckles, jerking around erratically, helpless. God experienced helplessness as Jesus was this little baby. The little baby grew up as a carpenter's son, and you know that was typical in those days that when you were brought up as in a family, you learned the trade of your dad. And Jesus was brought up as a carpenter's son. He learned the trade of a carpenter. So those tender little baby hands became rough, calloused hands. You shaking hands with a carpenter. We had a cabinet maker that worshipped with us in Richmond. And every time I shook his hand, boy, there was this strong grip. His calluses on his hands from working with the wood. And that's how we can think of Jesus' hands as a young boy, as the hands of a carpenter, strong and calloused. Those hands that were strong as a carpenter's hands were hands that turned into his compassionate, helping hands. Just one example. Jesus went into the home of a prominent religious leader, and when he was there, he noticed a man who had dropsy. If you got a nurse, you got a nurse here, it'd be edema, extraordinary retention of bodily fluid. Well, that's the problem this guy's got. And Jesus sees him, and it says Jesus took hold of him with his hand. And the man was healed. He was in the synagogue. And in the synagogue was this woman, crippled. It says she was bent over. Just bent over and couldn't straighten up. 18 years she'd been like this. Jesus saw her, said that he touched her with his hand, and she became well. She just straightened up. There was a time he was in the area of Jerusalem, and he saw a blind man begging. This blind man was a guy who had never, ever experienced sight. He'd never seen anything. He'd been blind all his life. And Jesus went over to the man and said that he bends down and he spits in the dust to make some mud. And he takes that mud and he puts it on the eyes of the blind man. touching his eyes. The blind man goes as he's instructed to do and washes his eyes, and for the first time in his life, he can see. When Jesus was leaving Jericho, and he was walking out, there were these two blind men, and they're calling out, "Jesus, Son of David, Jesus, Son of David, Jesus, Son of David." But there's this big crowd around Jesus. Who's going to notice these blind men? So they're hollering to make sure they get noticed. And Jesus goes over to these blind men, and it says that he's moved with compassion for them. And then he says, being moved with compassion for them, he touches their eyes. Now already I'm beginning to pick up on something here. Are you? Number one is, Jesus didn't have to touch any of these people, did he? He didn't have to touch them to heal them. He could just speak it and they'd be healed if he wanted to. What's going on with this touching business? It seems that the touch of his hands is an extension of the compassion in his heart. And the compassion that he feels in his heart is expressed in these touches. Well, he goes to visit Peter's house, Peter and Andrew's house. And on entering the house, he finds out that Peter's mother-in-law has an extraordinarily high fever. She's sick in bed. So Jesus goes back to where she is. He extends his hand to her, takes her by the hand. She gets up out of bed and begins to wait on everybody in the house, hustling and bustling about. Jairus, ruler of the synagogue, had one child, a daughter, 12 years old. She was deathly ill. Jesus was teaching, and Jairus comes up to Jesus, and he's desperate. My daughter, you got to come and help my daughter. My daughter's dying. You got to help her. Jesus follows Jairus to his house with Peter and John and mom and dad. He goes back to where this daughter is. It seems like it's too late because the mourners are mourning. They're wailing outside. You should have gotten here earlier. She's dead. It says that Jesus takes her by the hand and says, "Get up." And she did. When Luke was doing his research to write the life of Jesus, apparently he ran into this phenomenon that Jesus is touching people all the time when he's ministering to them. That just seems to be a part of what he does. And so one of the places is Luke's talking about it. He says it's sunset and people are still thronging to Jesus. And it says that Jesus touched each one. It's emphatic there that each one of these people, Jesus touched them as he healed them. Well, these hands of Jesus, the hands that express the compassion, were hands that expressed compassion to a man that nobody had touched for a long time. Imagine going a couple of months without being touched. Imagine going several years with no one touching you. That's your fate as a leper. You cry out to people, I'm a leper, so they can avoid you, so they won't accidentally touch you, much less deliberately touch you. There's the loneliest sort of life that could be imagined, a leper untouched. And this leper sees Jesus and he just falls on his knees, begs Jesus to help him. Now, here again, what's Jesus got to do? He wants to help him. What Jesus can do anything to help him. But the amazing thing is that when the ordinary response to a leper would be to step which way?
Back.
backwards. What Jesus does is he steps forward and he touches, points out that he has compassion on the man, and he touches him. What a beautiful experience. These same hands that could show such compassion could show fury. This time he comes into Jerusalem and he sees this scene that just infuriates him. People have traveled from great long distances to offer sacrifice in the temple. And what's happened here is that the locals are ripping them off every way you can think of. If they managed to be able to bring a sacrifice to offer, it got rejected. It wasn't good enough. Why? So they'd have to buy a local. Most people couldn't travel with a sacrifice. They couldn't bring an animal with them anyway. So they had to buy a local. Well, the prices were extravagant. You're talking about being overcharged. They were overcharged for anything they bought to offer as a sacrifice. Then, here's the other problem they had. They're coming from other countries, so they have the currency of the country where they live. But can they buy any of the animals with that currency? No, you got to go over here and switch your currency out for the local currency. Well, guess what these guys were doing that were doing the money trading? Nothing favorable to these travelers. They were being ripped off here. So this is the scene Jesus walks in on. And so little respect would be shown for God. This is his house. This is his temple. And all this going on right there. And he makes a bundle of cords into a whip, and he drives out all of the animals that are there. He goes over to the money changers' tables, and with his hands, he just flips the tables, and coins go every direction. That was the fury that Jesus showed and expressed with these hands. He did some really intriguing things with his hands. There was a time when this woman was brought into the crowd where he was and put on parade right out there on display in front of everybody. We found this woman in the very act of adultery. And everybody looks at her. Important question here. Where's the guy? This may have been 2,000 years ago, but it still took two to commit adultery, right? But it's just the woman. So Moses' law says we need to stone her. What do you say, Jesus? All of this to get Jesus to commit himself in a way that would get him in trouble with the authorities. And you remember Jesus drops down and with his hand starts drawing in the dirt. Now, we all want to know what he drew. Did he just doodle? What did he draw in the dirt? People, they're still after him, you know. So he stands up and says, okay, you, the one without any sin, throw the first rock at him. And he stoops down and he draws some more. And we wonder what he drew the second time. Did he just doodle some more? Did he write down some sins that people might have been guilty of? We don't really know what he drew. Come on in. Good morning, good morning. I'll back up and let you have front row. Glad you're here. That's funny, the difference that 3.5 feet can make. I felt real close to you. Now I feel like you suddenly go. Alright, so Jesus gone in the dirt with his hand, drew the attention away from this woman. You just imagine how that woman felt. A spectacle of all these men staring at her. Jesus drew the attention completely off of her, and as one by one by one by one they all leave, then he tells the woman, go and don't stand like that anymore. Well, there was a time when Jesus and the disciples had been together on one side of the Sea of Galilee, and he sent them in the boat on back across. And he went up in the mountain to pray, and he does that. He comes down, and they're out there part way across the lake, and Jesus just starts walking across the lake. And it's blowing pretty good, and they look and they see Jesus coming, and Peter, impulsive Peter, says, hey, that's you, Jesus? If it's you, tell me to come out there and let me walk. And so Jesus says, come on. So Peter steps out and he begins to walk on the water too. But then it says he takes his eyes off of Jesus and begins to look around at the storm. Isn't that the bottom of most of our problems, is when we take our eyes off of Jesus? But when Peter did this, it says Jesus reached out with his hand and pulled him up and helped him into the boat. He was teaching the people, and he'd been teaching to them all day long, and it's supper time, and folks are hungry. And the disciples said, we need to do something about feeding these people. Got to go get some food. Well, Jesus said, what you got? And we got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Let's feed them. Let's feed them. There were 5,000 just men. They're divided up into groups of 50, and it says Jesus takes his hands. With his hands, he breaks up these 5 loaves of bread and these 2 fish and starts distributing and distributing and distributing and distributing. And 5,000 just men, don't know how many the total crowd was, they all ate and there was stuff left over. And I bet you some of you know how much was left over. How much? 12 baskets full were left over. You know, one of the most interesting insights into people is to see how children view them. Children love Jesus. Obviously, it is. But it's just one time his disciples were in this big argument about who is the greatest, who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom. Jesus heard there. They're bickering about that. What he does, he says he calls a child to him, takes a child in his arms. Now, see, this tells us something about Jesus, this child's willingness to come to Jesus and be taken into his arms. It tells us something about Jesus, his wanting to take this child in his arms, embrace this child. And essentially says, this is the attitude that you need to have. Like this little child. Well, there was this other occasion and it involved children. The parents were wanting to bring their children to Jesus to be blessed. That'd be a pretty natural thing to do, wouldn't it? If you had a child and you saw this power that Jesus had, you'd want Jesus to bless your child. Well, they did. So they're trying to get to Jesus to get him to bless their child. And the disciples say, hey, wait a minute. We don't have time for that. We've got important things to do with grown-ups, with big people. And get your children out of here. That's a loose paraphrase of what they said. And And Jesus says, let those children come here to me. And again, it mentions his calling the children to him and taking them and touching them. Every one of those children that were brought to Jesus, Jesus touched them. One of the really compelling things that Jesus did with his hands was the time when he told his disciples to prepare this meal in the upper room, Passover, and celebrate Passover with his disciples. So we're in the upper room, we're ready for the meal, and there's a major oversight here, a major, major oversight. Nobody extended the hospitality of washing the feet of the people that came in. Now, this is just something you did. Carol and I visited a good bit in Europe and in visiting missionaries in Europe. And when you go in a home of just about anybody in Europe, you take your shoes off and leave them at the door. And usually they have several pairs of house slippers for you to slip on. You hope there's a pair that fit. And you slip on it. That's just what they do. You have dirty old stuff out there that you had on your shoes. You leave with your shoes when you park them at the door. And you put on these house slippers that have only been in the house. Well, compound that a bit when you're living no sidewalk, dusty roads. Everywhere you're walking, you're getting your feet dirty in your sandals. And so when you come into a place, it was just the thing that was done was somebody washed your feet. Usually it was a servant. That was the job of a servant. They would meet the guests and wash their feet as they came in the door. Well, the problem with these disciples was, who was going to be the foot washer? Not me, Jack. I'm not going to wash their feet. If anybody's going to have the feet washed, I'm going to have them wash my feet. So nobody will do it. They're still dinging it out over who's the most important one of them. And so what does Jesus do? Takes off his outer garment, wraps a towel around him, and he proceeds to wash their feet. And he didn't have a Egyptian cotton washcloth. He didn't use a washcloth. He used his hands. He washed each one of those guys' feet. He washed 24 heels. He washed between 120 toes. With his hands, he washed their feet. We're nearing the end of the story of Jesus. He's compelled to carry his own cross out to where he'd be crucified. With his hand, he's carrying this huge piece of timber. Isn't there an irony there that the carpenter who worked with timber now is carrying this big wooden cross out for his own crucifixion? And then these huge spikes are driven through these precious hands, right through the tender nerve, central palms of his hand. But the story doesn't end there, does it? It's after his crucifixion. There's two of his disciples walking along the road on the way to Emmaus. They're depressed, would be a way to say it, discouraged. They're depressed. The one they had put their hope in has been crucified. He's dead. Didn't know what to make of it. They walk along. The resurrected Jesus joins them walking. But they don't recognize that it's Jesus. He walks along with them, and they get to the village where they're staying. And acts like he's going on, but they encourage him to stay with them, invite him in for a meal, It says Jesus breaks bread and gives it to them. And in that, they recognized who he was and saw that it was the resurrected Jesus. Then there were these times that he just encouraged them. He said, you come and put your finger. That's why we know it was a huge spike that was driven through the hand of Jesus, because he encourages them to poke their finger in a hole that's there in his hand. But he presents that as a testimony, as a witness. It's me, the one you saw crucified. I'm alive. And you can touch these wounds. They're still floundering about, and they're discouraged, depressed. And you know what men do when they're sort of down? They do like Russ does, and they say, let's go fishing. So they decide to go fishing. They go out and they fished all night, and they hadn't done any good. And they hear a voice from the shore saying, throw your net on the other side. They do that, and they fill up the fish, and they come to the shore. And it's Jesus on the shore. It says that he's built a fire, and he's cooked some fish and some bread. And there with his hands, he says, come on, guys, I have some breakfast for you. He cooked breakfast for them with his hands. It was going to be the last time that he was person-to-person with these guys. And as Luke is telling us about it, he says that Jesus held out his hand and he blessed them. And then he ascended to be with his Father. The hands of Jesus tell his story. What it does for me is it just makes me love Jesus even more. Makes me appreciate his humanity. He really, really was one of us, wasn't he? He experienced life as we experience it. And yet there's something about him that's far more power than I have. His power to cause blind people to see, to heal all manner of diseases. You know, there's some people who don't want to believe in the miraculous. They don't want to acknowledge the supernatural in any way. They want to say, there was this good man named Jesus. He was a cool dude. You know, he did things to help people, but none of this Son of God stuff. We don't believe in any of that. We just have this good man Jesus. We'll go through the story and take out all the supernatural, and what do you have left? What do you have left of the hands of Jesus? Jesus' humanity and Jesus' deity are also interwoven. They can't really be separated. He is very much man. He is very much, completely, the Son of God. Looking at Jesus' hand is an inspiration for us to do with our hand what Jesus did with his hand. Think about how not self-centered he was, how serving he was with his hand. It inspires us to want to be like that in the way we use our own hand. I have no idea what time it is, but it's the end of my lesson time. So you take it and run with it. Thank you.